Chapter 13. Tuesday, April 13th, 0011, New Era. 1700 hours. When they rendezvoused with the 14th in the gym at 1700 hours, they discovered that William had been right. The unit was gathered around an open area on the floor, a sparring circle. It was a fight night. As they approached, Scott tried to associate faces with names. Clark. He knew Clark easily. Ivan Baranov was the one William and Joe had spoken of earlier, the tank. He would be hard to forget now. As they neared the sparring circle, Clark addressed them.
How goes it, gentlemen? Glad to see you found us. Today we're going to partake in some hand-to-hand combat training.
Scott's gaze deviated from Clark slightly. Svetlana stood out, equally for her beauty and the memory of her exposure to Beacon in the shower. If not for Nicole, Scott would have been jealous. Maybe he still was, just a little bit. No, that wasn't allowed. Then there was Travis Navarro, the pilot. He was the most average-looking individual, yet his identity stuck in Scott's mind, perhaps because he seemed friendly. Clark continued.
I'm sure you've all had your share of free sparring in the academy, and Richmond as well. The same rules apply here. No ropes, no ring, no mat, just the floor and some space.
For the life of him, he couldn't remember the two lieutenants beneath Clark and Baranov. One of their names started with a D. D. something. He remembered Varvara Yudina well, the youngest medic. She flashed a cute smile at them. It was very engaging.
You won't have a mat beneath you when you find yourself face to face with a Ceratopian, so you haven't got one here either. Sorry. All right, ladies and gentlemen, please prepare yourselves.
As Scott geared up with the rest of the unit, his mind continued to compare the 14th's faces with his memory. He couldn't remember the medic with the butch haircut. He remembered Boris Evtiv, the technician with the black beard. He remembered Fox Powers, the sniper. And Max. Something about Max had embedded itself in his mind. It was the way Max had looked him over when he was introduced to the unit. Was it anger? How could it be? He didn't even know Scott. Before he realized it, he was fully equipped in proper sparring attire, and so was everyone else. He joined them in preparatory stretches. Scott surveyed the room when William Harbinger caught his eye. The giant demolitionist stood in the distance where a crowd gathered to observe. God, William was huge. He stood out like a titan. As soon as everyone was finished, Clark began.
We might as well hold a proper initiation since we've got newcomers to the unit. Typically, we all just partner up on our own and spar as we wish, though occasionally I like to do specific bouts, as we'll do today. Here's how we'll run things this evening. I'll have each of our new arrivals, McCrae, Remington, Jurgen, and Timmons, match up against three operatives. They shall act as a tag team, while you...
He motioned to the operatives.
...remain in the ring alone. They are free to tag as often as they'd like.
Three on one? That was worse than mean. It was disgustingly awkward. They hadn't even met everyone yet. They hadn't had a single conversation with anyone other than Clark. Now they were going to fight them three on one? Scott didn't like that idea at all. Maybe it would bond them. Somehow he doubted it.
I'll just observe today. I'd like to see how the four of you handle yourselves. Any questions?
Tension prevailed.
Very well, then. Anyone care to offer themselves out first?
Scott stared at David, Beacon, and Jaden. They all stared back at him, then at each other. None of them said a word. Scott almost laughed. He didn't know who the first fool to volunteer himself would be, but it sure wasn't going to be him.
Well then, let's observe Remington first, if he'll please. I'm curious to see how the Golden Lion composes himself.
Scott's eyes rolled shut. It figured.
Lieutenant Dostoevsky, please give the Good Gamma Private a run, will you?
Dostoevsky, that was the D name. Yuri Dostoevsky, like the old Russian writer. Dostoevsky nodded as he stood.
Yes, sir.
He scanned the rest of the unit.
Does anyone want to fight Remington?
There was no hesitation as Max leapt to his feet.
I do.
Max stepped into the circle. What was it with him? That response was a little too immediate to be general submission. Dostoevsky smirked in Max's direction.
Anyone else?
No response came, and he motioned to Varvara.
Varya, come.
the cute one with a compelling smile. Scott didn't want to have to fight her.
Da, Lieutenant.
Varvara answered as she stood and stepped to the circle. Scott flinched as David and Pekin slapped his back. The support was a good touch, but he knew what they were thinking. They were glad it wasn't them. Scott stepped to the center of the circle. Dostoevsky spoke again.
Max will go first. I will follow, then Varya. Ready?
Scott nodded.
Yes, sir.
He was as ready as he'd ever be. All Eden cadets went through sparring drills in Philadelphia. This couldn't be much different. Max was tall, athletic, experienced. He'd be a good fight. Max approached the center of the circle, where his eyes locked onto Scott's. That familiar gleam was there again. It was hatred.
Ready.
Dostoevsky nodded.
Go.
Scott bounced as soon as Dostoevsky spoke. His eyes focused on Max, who lightened on his feet as well. Attack first. Take the initiative. Scott danced forward to jab into Max's direction. Experimental jabs, testing Max's speed. Max was sure to do the same. Or not. As soon as Scott's first half-speed jab reached out, Max slammed it out of the way and cracked his fist against Scott's face. He fell backward to the floor. Scott stared at Max. His gaze narrowed as he pushed to his feet. He cocked his arm and prepared for another jab. As soon as Max stepped forward to intercept, as he had before, Scott withdrew the jab, bent to the side, and slammed the other fist into the side of Max's headgear. Before Max could regain his footing, Scott sent a left hook straight into his face. Max stumbled and fell to the floor. They exchanged glares, and Max slammed himself to a stand.
All right.
As soon as he was up, Max started forward and stomped on the ground. Scott flinched. Max attacked. The next thing Scott knew, Max was upon him. His fists struck ahead as Scott tried to counter them. Scott blocked a jab. Max popped him in the cheek. Scott parried an uppercut. Max pounded him in the ribs. For every attack that Scott blocked, Max landed another. Scott never had a second to retaliate. What was going on? This wasn't an exercise. This was a brawl. No one in training attacked like this. Scott was pushed to the edge of the ring as his defenses faltered. The next thing he knew, Max grabbed him around the waist and hurled him back toward the center of the circle. Scott skidded to the ground and spun his head around. Then it happened. Something slammed into his face. His lips erupted. His vision blacked. He flopped flat on his back. Max had kicked him in the face. Everything about practice etiquette just flew out the window.
Get up. You have to get up.
Scott staggered to his feet, but Max was on him. He grabbed Scott's head with both hands and slung him around and away. Scott's feet tripped up and fell at the edge of the ring. Before Max could attack again, Dostoevsky's voice broke the fight.
Dig!
Max glared at Dostoevsky, then leaned his mouth next to Scott's ear.
Nice work, Golden Lion.
He shoved at Scott's head, then strolled to the edge of the circle.
Get ready, Remington,
Dostoevsky said. Scott couldn't even think straight, despite his slow rise from the floor. What just happened? He got his tail torn off, that's what happened. God, his jaw hurt. No time for that. Only time for Dostoevsky. Dostoevsky. As soon as Scott moved to face the lieutenant, the attack was there. A jab stung him in the face. Scott flew back and the assault followed. Face, chest, ribs, strike after strike, Dostoevsky pushed Scott to the edge of the ring again. The lieutenant was fast. Faster than Max, more painful than Max. He had to do something.
Defend yourself.
Even an effort was better than a total beating. He mustered his pride and surged forward with a fist. Dostoevsky snatched it in mid-flight. His fingers curled around it and twisted it. A simple, effortless twist. The pain was electric. It sparked through Scott's body like 10,000 volts, and he found himself completely paralyzed, arm outstretched and pathetic like a captive, helpless fool. Dostoevsky's grip tightened. Then he swept Scott's feet out from under him. A groan emerged from the crowd of spectators. Scott clutched his wrist and pushed to his feet. This was bad. This was total shame.
Defend yourself, you idiot. Fight back.
He struck out again, though his wrist was grabbed again in mid-flight. Dostoevsky flicked it, and Scott flipped flat on his back with a loud thud. His spine throbbed, but there was no time to register the pain. Dostoevsky kicked him in the face, just as Max had, then stomped on his chest and stomach with vehement force. Nightman force. Scott's head rolled backward as he rasped, his breathing uneven. He couldn't move. Everything hurt. Everything felt battered. He knew he was bleeding, He could feel blood oozing from his lips and his eyebrow. His body was bruised. It was over. Dostoevsky murmured something to Varvara. Then he stepped past Clark.
This is a joke.
Clark half frowned. The next touch Scott felt wasn't a kick to the face or a foot to the stomach. It was a hand as it slid gently beneath his head and neck. Varvara. He hadn't wanted to fight her, and now he didn't have to. How could this have happened? This all had to be a dream. She slipped Scott's headgear off him and rolled it to the side. As Scott opened his eyes for the first time since he last fell, she smiled at him. It wasn't quite the cute smile she had given him before. Now it was a smile of apology. The 14th watched in silence as she aided him upright, then to a stand. A joke. That's what he was now. So said his new lieutenant. He was a joke, in front of everybody. His friends, his new unit, even William and everyone who had observed this disgrace of a fight. Scott wanted to disappear. Sheer determination allowed him to carry himself out of the circle, though Varvara remained at his side the entire way. He lowered himself to a seat, and she took one beside him. The apologetic smile remained as she slid a cloth to his lips and dabbed away the blood. Scott's gaze remained downcast to the floor. Clark finally spoke up.
I'm very sorry. That was one of the most heartfelt initiations I've seen in my life. Anyone care to go next, please?
Beacon hopped to his feet, slid on his headgear, and trotted into the ring.
I do.
Scott blinked as he watched Beacon. Clark opened his mouth but thought the better of it and stifled his words. He cleared his throat and turned to Lieutenant Novikov.
Very well, then. Anatoly, will you please entertain the good Beta?
Lieutenant Novikov, the third nightman, nodded.
Yes, Captain.
He rose and motioned to Travis, the pilot, and Boris Evtiev, the technician.
Come. Either of you want to go first?
All.
What?
All three, same time.
Beacon wanted to fight all three of them at the same time? Was he insane?
I'm sorry, but you can't be serious.
MR, sir.
Clark and Novikov eyed one another. Everyone else stared at Beacon in astonishment. Farther away with the rest of the spectators, William Harbinger looked impassive. Clark half smiled.
Well, if he desires a 3-on-1 punch-up, by all means, give him one.
Scott watched Beacon as he made his way into the circle on the floor. Travis and Boris weren't nightmen, but Novikov was. Beacon was up to something. He had to be up to something. If he wasn't, then he had lost his mind. Novikov, Travis, and Boris grouped themselves into a semicircle in front of Beacon, who tilted his head to flex his neck muscles. Otherwise, he seemed unprepared. No other stretches, no loosening up, nothing.
Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Beacon answered as he assumed a loose stance. His eyes darted to the edge of the ring, where they found Svetlana. He winked at her.
Go.
Before Travis or Boris could acknowledge with a yes, sir, Beacon leapt at Lieutenant Novikov and flung his foot through the air. It collided with Novikov's face. Novikov spun in a circle and dropped to the floor. Svetlana gasped. Next, Beacon lunged at Boris, grabbed him by his headgear, and punched him square in the face. A mist of red exploded from Boris' lips as he stumbled out of the arena. As Novikov stammered and attempted to stand, Travis thrust a fist at Beacon from behind. Beacon swirled around, snatched it in mid-flight, and balanced against it as he popped three kicks at the pilot's cheek. Travis teetered as a final kick slammed into his chest. He toppled to the ground. Novikov had staggered to his feet, but before he could gather his bearings, Beacon dashed at him, spun around, and smashed an elbow into the center of his forehead. Novikov's head cocked backward, and he collapsed. He was out cold, and both of the other men were sprawled on the ground. The fight was over. There was no sound. If a pin had fallen, it would have echoed throughout the gym. Scott's swollen lips parted as he watched in a dead stare. A point had been made with thundering authority. Beacon's devilish smile curled up at Max, and he mouthed the word, "You." Max made no response.
That was the most impressive thing I've seen in my life.
Thank you, sir,
Beacon answered as he filtered through the audience back to his seat.
Next, please.
The rest of the fights were lackluster, Scott observed as David and Jaden held their own in their matches, though neither could replicate Beacon's 3-on-1 feat. As for Novikov, he was tended to personally by Svetlana. When that tender aid involved a kiss, Scott knew that she and the lieutenant were more than comrades. Clark's small talk concluded the evening, and they dismissed for room 14. Showers came next, and food in the cafeteria after. As before, Scott and his companions found acceptance with William and Joe, though now they were joined by two 14th defectors, Travis and Fox Powers. Travis, despite his beating, enthusiastically praised Beacon for his fighting prowess. Fox exchanged sniper talk with Jaden. William was more interested in ribbing Scott for his downfall than in joining any meaningful conversation, but Scott only laughed it off and changed the subject. By the time conversation died down, it was almost 2100. Almost curfew, and time for the 14th to retire to its room. Day one was over. Night number two was just beginning. Scott lay wide awake. He peered to the bunk bed above, where David slept, out of view. It was past midnight, and the 14th was asleep. All except for Scott. He wasn't sure whether to blame it on jet lag or the day's events. But nonetheless, he laid in sleeplessness, hands behind his head, as he listened to the steady breathing of those around him. The soreness had begun to set in. The embarrassment had set in much earlier, despite his efforts at bravado. For the first time since the whirlwind of the transfer, Scott missed his comrades from Charlie's squad. Colonel Lylan and Major Tacker, Michael Carter and Donald, and of course the two girls. He missed Henry and Ziegler. He missed immortality. But more than anything, he missed Nicole. He had called her earlier that day, but the conversation was almost painfully short. She didn't have time to talk. She had other things to do. For the first time, he noticed something different about her voice. Something gone that had always been there in the past. Hope. He hadn't seen her in 4 months. He knew it would be much longer before he'd see her again. The thought of Richmond being too far away seemed laughable now. He would have gladly stayed there had he known Russia was the alternative. But now, what did it matter? He was there. There was nothing he could do to change it. He recalled every detail about the day he had proposed. Every little thing. It had been a gorgeous Sunday afternoon. The sun shone splendidly. She wore a yellow shirt and blue jeans, and her hair was tied back in a ponytail. They were on a picnic. She always loved them. He always got dragged along, but this time it was his idea. She was delighted with his initiative. He knew if he tried to pull off anything cute, it would come off sounding cliched. So he just told her.
You were put in my life to be my love. If I tried to tell you what you mean to me, we'd be here all night. I love you. I intend to love you forever. And there's no other girl who can change that. You are my girl. I want to be your man. Nikki, will you marry me?
He remembered her eyes as they glistened and her smile lit up.
Scott, you're already my man.
He could still taste the passion in her kiss. Sleep was futile. It was pointless to even try. He reached down to the floor and felt around with his fingers for the cover of his scripture. His hand curled around it. He propped himself up and slid out of bed. He was well adjusted to the darkness by that point, and he quietly padded to the lounge. It wasn't until he was only steps away that he noticed an orange glow beneath its door. There could only be one explanation. Someone was there. He hadn't heard anyone leave their beds all night. Either he had fallen asleep, or someone had never left the lounge in the first place. He gripped the knob, turned it, and gave the door a gentle push. He saw her the moment he stepped inside. Svetlana. She sat at a corner table, her hands clasped together, as golden strands of her hair shone down the sides of her face. Her posture tensed as she turned to acknowledge him. Scott froze in the doorway. The atmosphere became awkward. Scott wasn't sure how he was supposed to greet her. Was it appropriate to say something? Was he supposed to put on a fake smile and pretend she was a friend, despite the fact that he had never spoken to her? He knew two things about Svetlana. She was beautiful, and she was sour. At least, that's how she struck him. He wasn't sure if it was his fault or hers. His body went rigid as the orange flicker of the countertop lamp bled through the lounge door. Svetlana and him. Two strangers with nothing in common, except shower stalls and forced camaraderie. Nothing in common, and nothing to talk about. He sensed the bunk room behind him. Someone would wake up any second, and once again Scott would find himself in the midst of anger. The golden lion, pathetic fighter, and disturber of a good night's sleep. Him.
You Americans have strange customs.
Scott's mind snapped back to the present.
What?
You open door, stare at me, and say nothing. That is indeed strange custom, is it not?
I'm sorry. I didn't know if coming in would bother you.
She sat back in her chair.
Come in if you wish. But whatever you do, please close the door, or you will learn new Russian custom. Knock down the man who wakes everyone up.
That was indeed a custom he wanted nothing to do with. He had taken his fair share of beating already. He had a busted lip and a bruised jaw to prove it.
So, what is the trembling that keeps the golden lion awake at night?
He stared at her. It sounded so venomous the way she said it. The golden lion. It was as if the title itself was created for mockery. It hadn't been that way at Richmond. Svetlana lowered her head.
I'm sorry. Does it offend you when I call you that?
It didn't offend him. It disappointed him. He wasn't a medal. He was Scott James Remington, a soldier, doing the best he could to help the war. He had never asked for anything else, but he'd accepted it when it was given to him. Did that make him bad? It didn't offend him. It hurt him. It hurt him because, in his heart of hearts, he wasn't just a soldier. He was a human being, trying to make a difference. Not just in the war. In the lives of the people around him. He was a nice guy with a gun.
Remington.
For a second time, Svetlana's voice freed him from his thoughts. His focus snapped back to her, and once again he beheld her form. But something was different. Her narrowed gaze was missing. Her pointed expression had melted away. She was no longer the woman who'd invited him in with venomous sarcasm. Her dark blonde brows were arched. Her lips were thinly parted. She was a girl who realized he was hurting.
I'm sorry.
It is okay. Come and sit, please.
I really don't want to disturb you. I didn't think anyone would be here.
No. Please. You are not disturbing me. Come and sit and we will talk, okay?
Before he moved to the table and slid into the chair, he allowed himself a moment of composure. He hated sympathy. He hated it more than he hated the spite in the words golden lion when Max and Svetlana said them. As he sat, she offered her apology.
I am sorry about what I said when you came in. It was stupid of me.
It's all right.
No, it's not. I am sorry.
Scott took his seat in silence.
What is it that keeps you awake?
I don't know. Not sure if it's just jet lag or just thinking.
I think we both know it must be something that you are thinking.
Okay, you win there.
So what is it then?
What was he supposed to tell her? He was dealing with all sorts of things. Loneliness. Anxiety. Doubt. She wanted the truth? He wasn't sure he was ready for that.
Just some personal things I'm dealing with.
Mr. Remington, a doctor hears all kinds of personal things. You may tell me if you wish.
Are you really asking me for medical reasons?
No, it is not. But now you have me curious.
Why are you curious?
Cannot a girl be curious of the Golden Lion?
Why does everyone keep calling me that?
Well, is that not what you are?
No, it's not. My name is Scott, not Golden Lion.
Mr. Remington, surely...
My name is Scott.
Very well. Scott, surely you do not expect me to ignore the fact that you're holder of the most famous award in all of Eden.
I honestly wish you would. I don't want to be treated differently because of some stupid piece of metal.
You think it is stupid?
Everywhere I go, it's all everyone talks about. Now I'm a hero or a celebrity or some kind of knight. I'm not. I'm just a normal person going through something I never asked for. Do you know what my fiancé said when they gave it to me? She went crazy. She was terrified. She was furious. Everyone thinks I wanted all of this. If I had known what I know now, I'd have never accepted it.
I am sorry to be so curious. It is only that I never thought that you might not like what you are.
Look where I am, Svetlana. I'm in the middle of Russia. My fiancé's in Michigan. People in my unit hate me. What do I have to do to get rid of this?
The lounge fell silent. Svetlana's lips parted, though she said nothing. The more he thought about it, the more Scott wished he had never assaulted the carrier. But he couldn't blame himself for it. He had felt, he had known, he could do it. He had done what any good soldier would have done. He'd finished the job. His attention returned to her. The expression on her face was a mixture of confusion and intrigue. As she brushed loose strands of hair from her cheek, she said,
I did not know you felt this way. I thought... I do not know what I thought of you.
Scott knew. She thought he was a walking ego. She thought he would walk into the unit with guns ablaze as his attitude pulled the trigger. She thought he would act like a Golden Lion.
I hear you now. And you are different from what I expected. You see, when the captain heard that you were coming, that is all he talked about. We will be getting Golden Lion over and over. And not only that, but you have been here for so little, and you are already Gamma Private. It took me 2 years to become Delta, as it did for Max. But you did all of these things in one mission. And now, to hear you say these things, I am amazed.
Amazed that I don't want all this?
Amazed that you hate it.
What she said was true. He did hate it. Every time someone talked about it or made a comment to him, he wished everything he had done would go away, or at least not become common knowledge.
I never asked to be a Gamma. I never asked for a Golden Lion. I never asked to be transferred here. It all just happened. I did the best I could, and this is where it got me. I don't know why I was chosen for all of this. And I know it's not fair, but what am I supposed to do? All I can do is to do the best I can.
I think that if everyone could hear what I am hearing, I do not know. You do not sound like I expected. You do not sound like a man who loves to be special soldier.
I don't love to be one. I never did. How do I tell everyone that?
I do not know. Maybe wait until they are alone in the lounge and then stand in the door until they invite you in. I do not know. I really cannot explain how everyone feels and how you make me feel now.
How do you feel now?
There is something about you. It is good, I think. It is different. I think that you are not like I expected Golden Lion to be. You do not talk about yourself in that way.
I understand how you thought I might be. But I'm not like that. I just want to be a soldier. I want to be a soldier and a good teammate.
Oh, I am afraid I must apologize. I'm now feeling very guilty about the things I thought of you.
You don't need to apologize.
No, I do. I thought bad things.
How bad are you talking about?
I do not think I want to say.
Well, you have to tell me now.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Then, if I must... I thought bad things when you fought with Max.
The fight with Max. That was the one thing he wished everyone would forget.
Must I continue?
Well, you certainly can't stop there.
Very well. I thought you looked better with your busted lip and maybe if he hit you hard enough, we could send you back to America in a rolling bed.
You actually thought that?
That was before this. I did not know. Now I feel terrible.
You should feel terrible.
Do you feel better now?
What else did you think?
Oh, I thought many things, but that was the worst.
That was pretty bad.
That is why I must apologize. I'm afraid I will go to hell now if I do not.
Well, you still might.
I am redeemed through my apology. What more must I do to make you feel better?
Do I get to name anything?
Maybe. We will see.
That's not much of a promise.
I said we will see.
Obviously, you weren't too worried about hell. Can you cook?
Can I cook? What do you call cooking?
What can you do?
I can put sugar in tea, and I can put butter on toast.
So, since neither of those are actually cooking, I'll take that as not at all.
Very well. I will cook for you. Is it breakfast you want?
Well, as wonderful as tea and toast sounds, I don't think that qualifies as a cooked meal.
I will cook for you. It will be a surprise one day, but you must not tell Tolya.
Tolya?
Yes, Lieutenant Novikov. Tolya is short for his first name, Anatoly.
That's right. She had kissed him after his fight with Beacon, if it could even be called a fight.
Fair enough.
Svetlana smiled and her eyes lingered on him. After a moment, she breathed deeply and looked away.
I think I like you now. Maybe not before, but I think at first I saw someone else when I saw you. Someone dangerous to the unit.
She locked her stare with his. For the first time, Scott noticed she had blue eyes. Blue like the ocean.
You are not dangerous. You act how Golden Lion should be.
Scott realized a different woman than he'd imagined was seated across the table from him. She wasn't sour. She wasn't laced with venom. He had misread her, just as she had misread him.
Svetlana.
You may call me Sveta.
Sveta. Thank you for tonight. Thank you for taking the time to hear me out. And to laugh with me. You're one of the few people who's actually done that.
David, Beacon, and Jaden had. And now her. For a moment, he didn't miss Nicole.
Thank you for coming in. It would have been sad if you turned away.
I think so too.
Other people do not think like I do now. But if they speak to me of you, I will tell them how I feel. I will tell them that you are good. If you will be there for me, I will be there for you. I promise.
Friendship. That was all he had ever wanted. He wanted someone to look out for, who would also look out for him. Of all the friends he'd made in Eden, she felt the best, and that was because he won her over. He had earned her respect.
I'll be there for you, I promise.
A smile broke from Scott's lips. Svetlana matched it.
You are cute when you smile. It is good to see you do it. You should watch yourself around the Russian women. One of us might steal you away.
Nicole would love to hear that, I'm sure.
Is that your love's name?
He nodded. She grinned.
That is a nice name. I would like to know how you met her.
Next time we get together, I'll tell you.
Yes, you must. And I will tell you how I swept Tolya off his feet.
Was it your beauty or your charm?
Oh, yes, I am sure it must have been my charm. But I will tell you about it another day. What you need to do now is sleep. Sleep will be good for you, and you'll feel better about things in the morning.
She was right. It always worked that way. He had been through every negative emotion that night. He needed to end while he was still on a good note.
That's probably a good idea.
Her blonde locks once again fell across the side of her face. Scott glanced at her for a moment more, and once again their gazes held together. Ocean blue eyes, the bluest he had ever seen. As Scott pushed back from his chair, she said,
Do not forget your book.
His black, leather-bound scripture lay on the tabletop, almost forgotten. Her words repeated in his head, but differently. Do not forget your God. He could never forget his God. His God had gotten him through the night. His God had given him her, a new friend, in spite of himself. Scott took the scripture in hand and made his way to the lounge door. As he turned the knob to pull it open, he looked back to Svetlana and mouthed a good night. She whispered it in return, as a final smile was cast his way. He stepped out. Room 14 was still silent, aside from the breathing of those who slept. As Scott gently closed the door, his eyes began to readjust to the darkness. He once again weaved his way through the bunks back to his own. He was quiet as he slid under the covers and placed his scripture under the bed. He laid still for a moment before exhaling and closing his eyes.
Thank you for tonight, God. Thank you for Svetlana. I'm sorry I ever doubted.
He was supposed to be there. He didn't know why, and he didn't know for how long. But he knew he was supposed to be there. In the morning, everything would feel better. In the morning, he would be all right. He never heard Svetlana leave the lounge that night. He was asleep before the lamp in the lounge went off.